Once, twice, three times a podcast. We are back.
Is that the measure of a podcast? If you do three, it's officially a podcast.
I know. I was just playing on the Lionel Richie song. Once, yeah. Twice, three times a lady.
Three times a podcast. So we made it to three.
Yep. Another hot Wednesday in Salt Lake.
Yeah. It feels good in here, though.
Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah.
The undisclosed location.
Yeah. Do you think we'll disclose it at some point?
Maybe.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
Maybe once I learn how to perform here, I could do that. That'd be fun, huh?
There we go. Yeah. Once you do that thing that this place does,
that certain performance art that this place does.
Yes.
That shall remain unnamed. Oh, that seems probably really annoying to anyone that's listening to that.
But you apparently want me to dance for you, so I need to learn how to work it. Your place too.
Yeah,
so.
I think it's only fair, you know, equality.
Exactly.
Okay, so should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's just jump into it.
So I picked another question from people who sent questions to my Molly the Stripper Instagram, and I'm mentioning that so you will send me more questions. You know, I'd like to make every podcast, you know, some answering some questions and touching on some topics people are curious about. And about my line of work, or me personally. So this one is, how do you keep your work life separate from your everyday life, especially with romantic relationship? So I picked this one because it wasn't the only one that asked about relationships and like being a stripper and how that works. And I'll probably do this every time, but I want to remind, you know, that I work at a club that doesn't do lap dances. I work in Salt Lake City, Utah, so I speak from that and what that's like to date with that being my occupation. I can't speak for, you know, other kinds of sex work or other kinds of clubs. So it's always, I just feel this need to like preface that no matter what. So for me, you know, in the capacity of the industry I am in, it has been very difficult to keep my work life and my personal life separate, and it has been a struggle to date. And I think I've already mentioned that on, you know, one of these, but I kind of wanted to get into the specifics of that, which are, you know, it's my job to flirt. I'm a professional flirter, which sounds like a terrible word. I actually hate the sound of that word. That's awful. But that is what I do. And so that, and there's an element of like having some level of communication with my customers outside of work. Yeah. Not that I always do that, because there's many customers that come in who are good friends of mine who we don't have any contact outside of the club. They either come in every day and so I see them and we keep up, or like they come in pretty regularly and we catch up when they're there. We do not have outside contact, and I really try to have a lot of boundaries about contact outside of the club. Having said that, you know, every entertainer in this industry decides where those lines are for them. And my line is usually that you can message me on social media, but I'm not going to give you my phone number. And that's typically because I'm always in a relationship. Like that's my MO. I consistently am in a monogamous relationship. And so, you know, that is part of the reason for that boundary. And there's other reasons for that boundary, which is like, you know, safety and just, you know, keeping work and my personal life separate. But you know, that's generally what I do. I do sometimes give my number to people, and that's usually if we've known each other like a pretty long time. I trust them. We have lots of mutual friends. And so there are some customers that for one reason or another do have my number. It's very, very rare. It's not something I do consistently. So having all that information and then, you know, correlating that to me being in a relationship, that would be very difficult to be in a relationship with someone who, whether it's through social media or through text message or whatever, is in contact with people who come and see them take their clothes off at work.
Yeah.
There's no way around, you know, this. And that's been really difficult for me because I've met a lot of people who I just love so much at the club, and I really can't ever separate that. You know, it's not like I met them while doing, I do like film work and things like that where people don't know I'm an exotic dancer. There's no way to to take away that element of the friendship, because that is how you met when I was practically naked, you know, jiggling on stage for you. And so, you know, a lot of the men and women I am friends with through the industry, I am friends with them because they maintain a level of courtesy and respect for me. And that includes things like I don't talk to these people sexually. And like I said, I don't think it's right or wrong the way you do or don't talk to your customers. I think you decide for yourself, like, where that is for you. And you decide with your partner, your romantic partner, where those lines are in your own relationship in general. And that's whatever industry you're in. You know, some people have open relationships, some people think it's okay to sext, or some people, you know, you have to have the same definition of cheating with your partner, you know, and agree upon what that is. And these are conversations that I've had, you know. So for me, I have a boyfriend who has been a bartender for 10 years and now owns his own bar. So what I like about that is he's got a very understanding view of being a professional at flirting. You know, that's been really nice because, you know, I think flirting can be really fun and really is kind of a pastime I enjoy and can feel really good for the people involved. And I don't think that that's, you know, bad or damaging to a relationship. And I think a lot of people would disagree. They would say flirting is cheating. And I don't feel that way. You know, I've walked into the bar with my boyfriend kind of flirting with a gal, and I'm like, great, he's doing his job, and he's probably getting a little ego boost at the same time, which is nice, you know. And that's the same for me at work, is, you know, when people compliment me or flirt with me, and that feels good, and that feels like, oh, I'm so cute, you know. And so you know, for me, that's fine. Like, flirt all you want, like, but especially when messaging or texting, or even in person, I like the flirting to be very appropriate. I can't think of another word other than that, like, I'm not going to be really joking around about, like, sexually explicit things with you. And if you do approach me in those ways online or in person, you're not someone I'm going to continue having a conversation with, because I think that's disrespectful to me and disrespectful to my relationship.
Yeah.
And so... you know, having said all that and having like an agreement with your partner about what they do and don't think is cheating, and then, like, you know, building that trust with that person, like, even with all that, it's a hard industry to be in, you know. Like, every once in a while my boyfriend comes in and he'll bring friends or something, and, you know, be at my club and having fun, and I can tell that he's trying to be cool, but there's a part of him that is like, all these people are looking at my girlfriend, and this is hard for me.
Me, as your friend, I gone in once, you know, shortly after you were on my podcast,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of awkward because it's like, that's my friend up
there. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, how much eye contact do I make?
Yeah.
You know, what do I look at for how long? You know, it's a very, very weird line.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of that even when you don't know the dancer. It's like, well, where do I look and how long do I look there and what's considered appropriate, which I'd like to actually address after this next comment, because I think that's an interesting thing to point out. But I will tell you from my perspective, and I also know that not all the dancers feel this way, is if someone comes in that's my friend, or sometimes like a coworker will come in, like, whether a dancer, a bouncer, a bartender, and they're there drinking, hanging out with their friends. So sometimes I know dancers that makes them really uncomfortable. It does not make me uncomfortable. It really, really does not. And I will make as much eye contact as possible usually, because I think part of it is I'm really enjoying making them feel uncomfortable. Like, that feels powerful to me, and I think it's funny. And so I'll kind of go out of my way to be a little more eye contact, a little raunchier sometimes, like just kind of whatever, because I get a little thrill out of that because it's funny.
Note to you, listeners, she is smirking so big right now.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Like, I got a little bit of, what's that called? Like a naughty little elf. That's the word, I think. But yeah. Like an imp, you know, that likes just a little bit of mischievousness. And so I really like that. Like, my sister's come in, my mom has come into the club. I don't know if I've mentioned that in any of these. I do not like them looking at me.
Yeah.
Like, mom. I mean, my sister, it was kind of fine, but then like sometimes I'd dance for her and I'd be a little more athletic or whatever, and you trying to show off in this athletic kind of way. But then I'd kind of be like, could you move from my stage so I can do the slutty stuff now? You know, like, it's harder to do that with my sister here. My mom didn't sit at the stage, but you know, she came up and tipped me. And again, I had to kind of put on this more like elegant, conservative kind of athletic pole dancing, where, you know, my performance is usually a little more on the, you know, sensual and raunchy side. And then also my comments about that is that I get that for people who don't frequent the strip club, that like seeing a friend of theirs like without their clothes on and dancing seductively is like very new, and to me it's just not at all. I see many of my friends like that consistently for years now, doing the same kinds of things, and so whether for good or bad, like, I'm jaded in that way, and I'm jaded in the way that like I don't feel uncomfortable. Like, I could do an interview just sitting here like in my underwear and I would just be like, whatever. This is what I look like. I'm pretty sure I'd be pretty comfortable in like a nudist colony. Like, I could just, you know, cook and go about my life, and I'd just be totally naked and feel just as comfortable, if not more comfortable, than with my clothes on. So I guess I want like you to know that, or for other people to know, like, I do want you to feel uncomfortable because it's funny.
Yeah.
But that I want you to know that I'm comfortable, and I do eventually want you to get comfortable, but I guess I just kind of enjoy just watching people squirm just a little bit, you know, like, cause yeah, it's funny.
So next week she'll be wearing next to nothing for yeah. next week's interview.
Well, yeah, from now on on the podcast. Hang on, let me take a drink. So what was that other thing I was going to address? Oh, guys looking at you, like, let's take away if I know them or whatever, yeah. or if they're my boyfriend's friends or anything like that. I have noticed that every single dancer thinks it's rude for you to just stare at their vagina, to just stare at the dancer's crotch is pretty consistent for every dancer I know, that it's like, you can look everywhere on my body, that's fine. Just don't like stare for 6 minutes, you know, at my crotch. Like, that's a bit much, you know, like, take a couple breaks, you know, look around.
Well, for me, if it's there and, you know, it's being presented, you know, I'll look then, but yeah, it, you know,
well, and that
I'll eventually move up to the face and, you know, smile.
Yeah.
It's like, I totally.
And, yeah. and to connect, because I think that's part of what bothers me the most about it, is that I'm like, I want to connect with you, and like, you're not looking up at me at any point to make that connection. And I guess that feels like maybe to humanize me a little bit. Like, I get that you're objectifying me and whatever, and that I'm choosing to profit off of that. But, you know, I still desire the human connection and like want that and feel more fulfilled in that. And I think the other person typically feels more fulfilled in that. And so, there was something else I was going to add to that. Oh, I actually just had a thought about, you know, professional dancers that are not strippers. I was talking to a professional dancer I know who said that dancers, you know, like I said, not exotic dancers, will look with their eyes at their body where they want you to direct your attention. So whatever they're doing, they'll like look at their hand, and then the person watching naturally looks at their hand, and then they'll look down and at their feet, and then the person will naturally look down at their feet, and then they'll do, you know, some kind of footwork or something. And that was really interesting to me because strippers do that also. You know, like when, and not all the time, sometimes they're looking around or doing whatever, but like often they will look at the parts of their body that they're directing your attention at. And it's funny and interesting exchange of connection where you watch someone follow what you're doing. They're following your eyes and looking where you're looking, and then they're looking back at your eyes to see where to look next, and then they look there next, and it's just really interesting.
I've noticed belly dancers are
probably
the most common.
Totally.
Ones that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the kind of thing. But let's see. Do you have any questions about, you know, that whole personal life relationship thing for me where I could expand on that?
The ones that are like creeps that like won't back off, that are like DMing all the time or just.
So I don't have a lot of experience with that. Like people are really shocked by when I do share the kinds of experience that I've had, because I do have like 22,000 followers on Instagram. So when people hear some of my experiences and the kind of lack of those things I've experienced, they're really shocked. Like, for example, someone was asking me, you know, how many dick pics I've gotten. And from what I can see, sometimes I don't open messages because I don't know that person, whatever. But I think I've gotten under 5, and I've had an Instagram for 6 years. A stripper Instagram that is, not, I don't know if it's sexually explicit. Would you call my page sexually explicit or just sexual or sensual?
Sexual, but I wouldn't say explicit.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's, you know, I've seen quite a few that I would, you know, classify as explicit, and I don't think mine's explicit, but it does have that topic that's obvious. And so you would think maybe I'd get more of those types of things, but I really don't. Like there's one guy who has sent me a flower, like a picture of a flower, a different kind of flower, almost every day for like 6 years. I've never messaged him back ever. But I have gotten to this point that like I know he can see that I open them, and I like opening them and seeing the flower he sent me. But I don't really want to engage with him. I don't.
Yeah.
I really am hesitant to really engage with anyone.
One day it's just going to be a dick in there. He's ran out of pictures. And
oh, my God. 6 years of really beautiful flowers. Yeah. Then he's like, the time has come. Time to whip out that dick pic. And so, you know, I've gotten a few, and I've really wanted to have a dialogue with them about it, because I'm not just like, I mean, some of them I've just blocked immediately. And usually that's kind of my go-to. If you've offended me in any kind of way in a message, I don't always respond. I'll probably say it's 50-50. Half the time, I just block them immediately and I never think of them again. And the other half of the time, I will try to articulate to them what they've done wrong. And sometimes I've gotten an apology afterwards, and they've been like, oh, I didn't realize I was coming across that way or whatever. Or like when I have had a dick pic and I've responded, I've basically just said, like, no woman wants that. Like, even if you're in a relationship with her, talk to her about it and see if that's what she's into. Having said that, I'm not in a relationship with you. I don't even know you. And I don't know a woman. And the conversation I've always had with women is, who is the one woman in 1,000 who's responding to this in a positive way that is encouraging, you know, this type of thing?
That made my day.
Like, but then I realized that it's really, I'm sure it has nothing to do with what the woman's response is. All it has to do with, and there's a certain percentage I read somewhere, a certain percentage of men that are compelled to exhibition, like to show their genitals. And like, I can't remember the whole thing, but it was like a psychology thing that it's a compulsion. It's like a, I'm not even sure if I remember that it said it arouses them as much as they almost like a tick, you know, like a, they couldn't help themselves. It's a psychological problem. So I've wondered if that's part of what's happening with the dick pic generation, is they really just need some good therapy.
That period of time in your line of work, that really surprises me that it's been so few.
People are shocked by that. And I have my theories about why that is, which are all like, I'm not sure if this is the right word, but probably very egocentric, which is that I'm like, well, I think I put off a certain air about myself that, you know, discourages people from trying to fuck with me. Like, and that's, you know, that is definitely the way I feel. And I almost feel like because I believe that, it manifests that way, because I have the same experience in the club that I, you know, I've had bad experiences, but like overall with the amount of drunk douchebags that come in sometimes, I really just don't have a lot of really negative experiences. But I think a lot of that is honestly just like my intellectual side of my brain being able to stay away from things that seem threatening to me.
Yeah.
And so that's the reality in the club, is that I'm really aware of kind of what's happening, and I'm looking around at people and the way that they're acting, and I'm staying away from people that, you know, have the potential to be abusive or shitty to me or whatever. And so online, I'm not really sure. Do you have a theory on why, like, I don't really get that kind of stuff very often?
No.
No?
No.
You don't think it's like a vibe about my Instagram that like is off-putting to people that are looking for that? I really don't know.
I find your account, you know, very inviting, because you're like, you know, this is what I'm doing, you know,
yeah.
Here's my butt, you know,
yeah.
See more, come, you know, come in, or
yeah,
just this is what I'm up to. This is me. This is my life, you know.
Then yeah, I'm not really sure why.
Yeah.
I just think, yeah. But I those things are pretty rare, and they can be very annoying to me when they do happen. Sometimes I feel very, sometimes I'm just like, haha, whatever. And then other times I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, and then I'll do, you know, passive aggressive thing. Well, not, it's more aggressive aggressive, not passive aggressive. But I'll, you know, post what they, you know, what they wrote to me in my story with their full name and profile picture, because I'm like, you want to act stupid? I'm going to show everyone how stupid you acted. Yeah. Like, I'm going to out you. And so, yeah. That kind of went from, I mean, I guess it's all correlated to like, you know, how this is my work and it does affect me personally in a lot of ways.
And being messaged personally, you know, because you can read that anytime, so it can affect wherever you are.
Yeah. I kind of have to work at that, like, not, I can't internalize or personalize a lot of things, because, you know, it has much more to do with them than it does me most of the time. And so I guess maybe that's my reflection on, I don't know then. I don't know, because I would say maybe that's my reflection on the people that are following me, is that most of them are just cool-ass people. And that's how I feel about the club, too. Most people are just good-ass people who, like, you know, want to be respectful, you know? So, and I feel like that's, yeah, 90% at least of the people.
Well, I think that has to do with how Salt Lake is changing, too.
Yeah.
You know, because back when I went regularly, you know, I felt, you know, that side of Salt Lake was a lot more, you know, kind of white trash and grittier.
Yeah.
But now it's more, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, learning about stuff all the time, and, you know.
Yeah, more, pretty progressive.
Progressive and more, yeah. You know, more artsy and, you yeah. know, appreciates performance. So it's.
Yeah. This is what I love about Salt Lake, is that, because this is kind of what I did, is there's the Mormon culture here, of course. And then what I'm liking that I'm seeing is that a lot of people have taken what they liked about that culture and then moved on from it and left what they didn't like, and have become more progressive. And even the people that are still Mormon, that's a lot of what I've seen here. But I am liking this kind of, like, you know, I've kept these values that I got from kind of living in Utah, which are like, you know, be kind to people, you know, be generous, you know, be have integrity, be honest, and things like that. And then incorporating that with also like, oh, women are equal, and like we like gay people, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Blending that together and trying to just take the best of both worlds. And that's a lot of what I kind of see in Salt Lake.
Very progressive, yeah.
Yes, very progressive in Salt Lake. And that's what I feel like I've tried to do is like, you know, like I don't know if I've said, but, you know, let go of a lot of my resentments towards the things I didn't like about being raised in the LDS church, and really just be grateful for a lot of the aspects of my personality that I gained from that, and appreciate that I are a part of me. And but, you know, and let go of the other shit that I don't like.
Yep, same boat. I left for reasons, and those reasons I've just tossed aside, but like the family and respect and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I like a lot of those values. They're good.
Yeah.
Which is what people say, like when I meet a lot of people from out of town, out of state, and they'll say really nice things about Mormons, because they'll be like, oh, there's a lot of Mormons here, and oh, I've had interactions with Mormons, and oh, they're really nice, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so, you know, those, I think that helped in my journey of trying to put things in perspective. Should we expand on anything else?
Not that I can think of. We're like 26 minutes, so we could probably do a short one.
More one. Question?
Yeah, one more.
Might take me a second to find one.
Dylan, edit this out. Future Dylan, edit this out.
Oh, this one has... Oh, I should save this for next time.
That's a teaser, folks.
That's a teaser, because someone sent me like 5 questions, and they're all really, really good. And so I think we'll save that for next time. Sorry, I'm still...
No, it's cool.
There's a bunch of them I haven't even opened yet, because I got so many.
There's the flower.
this one's about... You know, have I talked about that I was still Mormon when I started dancing?
On here, I don't think so.
Okay, because someone, you know, asked me about that. Because some people know, which, like, I had a guy at work recently go, he's like, every time I learn something new about you, it blows my mind. Because, like, you know, I did used to be a teacher, and, you know, I used to be Mormon, and I taught Relief Society and whatever. So he was just kind of like, what? And so I stayed Mormon for my first several months into dancing. And, you know, I paid my tithing on that. If people don't know what tithing is, it's 10% of your income goes to the church you're part of. And, you know, I had lots of conversations with my bishop about it. And, you know, at the time, I still felt very Mormon, even though, like, most of my life from, like, teenage years up, I'd had a lot of disagreements with a lot of the way things were run, or, like, you know, really strive to live these, like, values, but some of them, like, I just really struggled with and didn't agree with, you know? And so obviously I'd been doing pole dancing for years, which doesn't really, you know, seem like something Mormon girls do, which a lot of Mormon girls do, you know, do that for, you know, recreation. But yeah, I was still, you know, pretty devout, you know, really going every week to church and participating, and what ended up happening is I ended up feeling really, really happy when I was at work at the strip club, and really feeling connected to, like, a higher power, and feeling a destiny almost there, which sounds really weird, but, like, that's kind of what I was feeling. And I wasn't feeling that at church anymore. I was going to church and I wasn't really having a good time anymore. And I wasn't really feeling what someone would call the spirit, you know?
Yeah.
And I was feeling that much stronger connected at work with these women and meeting people and being able to express myself, you know, through music and dance. And so little by little, I just was kind of like, well, I don't think I want, and it was just a huge conflict, because then I'm like being a stripper, going to church on Sunday. And so inside myself, that was just like, am I supposed to feel bad about this? I should feel bad about this, but I don't feel bad about this. So what does that mean? That, like, I, you know, am not ashamed of this, but I'm supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think I didn't want to live with that kind of like conflict anymore. And it was like, well, then you got to choose one. And I chose the one that, you know, felt the best to me. And I don't regret that choice. And so, yeah.
What was the bishop's side of the conversation like?
He was super sweet. He was this really older guy who had just recently been married, had never been married before. And he, I'm pretty sure, was a virgin till he was like 50. Like, if you met this guy and talked to him, like, not, you know, an outlandish assumption to make. He was very soft-spoken and really kind and understanding to me. And I think he just was kind of like not really sure what to do with me, which was like, oh, you don't drink coffee, you wear your garments, you don't drink alcohol, but you're a single mom with no other income, and now you're working as a dancer. And what can I really say to you? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. that you found a way to support yourself and your child. And I think he just didn't really know how to handle it. And so he handled it with as much love as compassion as he could, which was, okay, I hear you. Let's meet every week and talk about this. You know, he was wanting to really, didn't want to lose me, but didn't want to push me away, kind of thing. And then when I left, he did have a really negative reaction, because I think he felt, you know, protective of me. And I think he didn't want me to leave.
Yeah.
And he could see that I was someone who needed love and compassion and support during a difficult time in my life. And so I think he wanted to be that. And when I finally got to a place, you know, I hadn't gone to church for a few weeks, and he's like, hey, what's going on? And I was like, I think I'm done. I don't think it's what I want anymore. And I think he was hurt. I think he was really hurt. And then I think, and that was, he'd asked me to come in and have a disciplinary council, which I was kind of like, so you were fine with me being a stripper all these months, but now that I don't want to go to church, now you want to have a disciplinary meeting with me, which, you know, if you're listening and you don't know, that's like a kind of court they have to decide if they're going to excommunicate you or disfellowship you, which are, you know, these punishments for not obeying, you know, the standards of the church. And by that point, I was like, no, I'm good. Fuck no. That. I don't need a bunch of old white dudes telling me, you know, their perceptions of my life, and they don't know me, they don't know my life, and they don't get to have judgment on it. And so yeah, I you know, I never saw him again. This was many, many years ago now. But I do feel, he was very kind and very compassionate to me and helpful to me during that time. So
that's good.
That's how he reacted to it.
Well, okay. I guess wrap close it out. Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy my ramblings about my life and my industry.
And her ways to make me uncomfortable.
So many ways. It's like fish in a barrel. Yeah.
What can I do to him this week?
Mwah-ah-ah-ah.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for the times that you've given me. The memories are all in my mind. And now that we've come to the end of our rainbow, there's something I must say out loud. You once, twice, three times later, and I love. Yes, you once, twice, three times.